family, I'm Dirk Addy. Speaker statement. How you doing, bro? Okay, speaker statement. The NA members chosen to speak at the meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the program of NA, of recovery, which are the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an ambassador, what's that? Abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is the possibility that the group experienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand the NA tradition and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, remind us that NA members from their area are willing to drive long distance to support new groups. The speakers help fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying a message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories, because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. And I'd like to thank my higher power for allowing me to read that, because I got here, didn't know how to read, comprehensive reading, and all that, you know. Woo. That was a gateway for me to get rid of the disturbance of my nervousness. So, and the program do work. And to tell you, I'm not here by mistake. My clean date is January the 3rd, 2001. My home group is 818 Miracles, Northeast D.C. That's my network. They say get a network when you get here. Get a sponsor. Use them. Do the step work. I'm a predecessor with Newcomer Time, for the ones that can understand that. I chose to do what the program say, follow directions. So following the directions allowed me to stand here and share my experience, strength, and hope. And what? It say, what is Narcotics Anonymous? We don't care who you use with, who your connections were, what you have done in the past. Only what you want to do about your recovery and how we can help. When I experienced that sentence right there, or paragraph, I think it was a sentence, that helped me get on a path to change. And with change, man, it was difficult. It wasn't hard. It was just difficult because I have a program that I like to run. And, you know, that's self-will. And every time I get up here and try to run that with self-will, I crash. I crash. My life turned into a runaway freight train and crash. And crack does it. Crack. No. So, coming to the program of Narcotics Anonymous, I was court committed. Early on, I never knew this was the best kept secret in the world. I never knew about this. My life was like the seesaw. I'm trying to stop, but I got to go back. You know, them up and downs. So when I found out about the program, the courts were sending me to get my slip signed. I went to meetings to get my slip signed. That was it. I did not go in to hear no stories or hear about nobody else's problems. Y'all had problems when I got here. Y'all did. I didn't. So I had to get open-minded, and all this started in the process of letting go the lifestyle. And that's where I'm going to go straight to, living the lifestyle. Growing up, I liked money. I started out stealing money from my mother and father off their dresser. Okay? I was a professional thief. I knew how to do strong arm on my parents. Stealing off the dresser. You know? And from that point, it escalated. I went to mommy's pocketbook. You know? Then I went to the aunts. When they had functions, leave the pocketbooks in the room, I was stealing their money. So I knew money was a problem. Wanting money. Money changed my moods today. But I have to know how it's changing my mood. I can't let it change me, and I act on it. I'm materialistic. I like things when I don't even need it. So I need to be careful of how I'm living. The program taught me this. The directions of the program taught me this. But liking money, it took me on a journey. I learned how to steal. My neighborhood, I've left out the neighborhood. I heard a brother say my best sponsor was my mother. You know, early on, she told me, do not go around that corner. And I went around the corner. When I went around the corner, I saw some of my friends was in school with me stealing. That's all right. That's how you got them, right? That's how I knew how they was getting things they had. You know, the new bicycles, skateboards, and stuff. And I just had a, I'm going to share this part about having a lunchbox. I was in Dough Rollers next door for breakfast, and I saw them lunchboxes up in the ceiling, right? I used to have one of them metal lunchboxes, you know, and more will be revealed, you know. More will be revealed. I'm going to leave it at that because I wanted to steal one of them lunchboxes, you know, to put up on my shelf. I have an NA shelf. But see, I'm working on something, and that's changed. That's where we recover, you know. We don't act on that thought. I rob Starbucks every morning. I drink coffee in Starbucks, y'all, every day. But when I go in there, I think about robbing them. But I can't get in trouble if I don't act. Say the thought is all right, but when I act out, I get in trouble. And I learned that here. Nobody never told me that before I got here. I grew up on an I Dare You program. You know? They say, Dirk, I dare you steal them. You know? And I had to think about it first, you know? Like, do we got two brothers? You know? Because they might jump me, you know? So, I dare you steal that bike. Knock the window out. You know, this stuff I committed growing up, thinking that was the way of lifestyle. And it escalated, man, to using. And to tell you, I went through the chain effect till I met crack. A little substance with no arms and legs punished me. It whipped me into submission, told me, you cannot beat me. A little substance. Right? I learned that word, substance. Okay? Punish me. Set me down in the seats of Narcotics Anonymous, admitting that I'm an addict. And I'm okay with that today. You know, I'm all right with that. I live in society today. I'm no longer locked up here. You know, I'm free. I took a trip, y'all. I heard about conventions just like this. And a sister, you know, she's one of my predecessors. She came to the meeting with sharing about she went to a convention down Durham. And I was like, whoa, okay. And she was sharing how excited she was, how nice the convention was. And I said, I need to find out about that, you know. I'm the curious type anyway. I want to know how the watch work, you know, so I open it up and take a look in it. So I did the same thing here. I got in the center of this, of Narcotics Anonymous, and found out, yeah, what this thing about. It's a clique. It's a cult. You know, them niggas, they be smoking somewhere. They doing something without getting caught. You know, that they could still wear their jewelry, drive their cars. You know, because I sell mines when I smoke. You know, all my stuff gets sold. So she told me about the convention and all, and I was curious. So I pulled her up after the meeting, and she told me, yeah, Dirk, you should go. You need to go. And I went. The next year, I went. I stepped out with some courage, you know, and I went. And I had a good time. I've been going to conventions ever since, you know. I even went way upstate New York. It was summer down here and snow up there on the ground. I was touched, you know. I met an Eskimo at a world convention in Atlanta. He told me they smoke crack. I was touched. The disease does not discriminate. See, I learned all that. And guess what else I learned? How to have some humor. See, I have a grand sponsor that has a lot of humor. And I was like, damn, but this guy is funny, man. He touched me. He showed me through my sponsor, you know, just listening. I ain't had to open my mouth. I said, they told me, Dirk, put the image down. Once you put the image down, you're going to get free. And I tried it. One more time, I took a risk. So I stand up here, don't have to project no image, front for nobody, you know, just be me. And now I'm free, all because of that. And when he cracked some jokes, right? He ain't in here right now. But he give up some jokes to make you say, dang, that's all right. It's good to laugh. See, that's part of my primary purpose of staying clean, to go reach some still suffering addicts and make them laugh. Because I'm on an H&I committee, okay? And I go back into the same jail that I met my sponsor. I met my sponsor when I was locked up. He came in and shared his spirit, strength, and hope, right, Bernard?
Yeah.
You know, he gave it up.
Yeah.
And I was like, dang. So I know what addicts to shoot dope go through. You know, I grew up. My mother told me don't go around that corner. So I seen all that. And I was like, oh, I know. If he could get off dope and look like that, I need to ask him to be my sponsor. And just through the grace, he said, yeah, he was my sponsor. When you get out, call me. And I did that. And I still stand here, alive. I got an orange shirt on. We wore orange. And my girlfriend brought me this shirt. And I was not going to wear no orange, y'all, ever in my life. That's change. I thought I would never wear orange again, okay? But it's okay. A bright color looks nice on me, you know? I look at myself in the mirror, you know? That's change. I could not do that before I got here, you know? The disease stripped me of my manhood growing up. You know, when I got here, I had to go back to the little boy stages, you know, and learn all over again. The men taught me how to grow up and become a man, be responsible, be a father, be an employer, pay my taxes, stuff like that. Now I get refunds, you know what I'm saying? And that is nice. Yeah. Getting refunds is, I understand when people, you know, roll up with nice things. I just be like, dang, that tax return, huh? And this other stuff I'm learning, you know, in that process. But, man, for this program, man, we do recover. You know, just knowing it's a worldwide thing. And since I've been going to conventions, I went out, that Atlanta convention was a world convention. I never I've never been on an airplane. Hear this. I'm a Washingtonian. I know where all the side street and back alleys. I stayed off the main streets. Pennsylvania Avenue, Rhode Island, Florida Avenue, you know, Southern. I stayed off the main streets, took the back streets. Because I looked bad. No, I did. I looked bad. You know? So, the back streets was my escape. That's where I hid at. Stayed in crack houses. You know, I couldn't face society, man. I couldn't face it. This program, man, took me to Atlanta on an airplane flight. An airplane flight. I never been on no airplane. I think it was 2-3 hours ride. It was something like that. And they said, Dirk, your ears going to be popping and all that. Chew some gum and stuff. I'm all right. I can handle it, you know. I can handle this. And going up there, yes, it that happened. And I ain't have no gum, nothing. And I had to put up with them ears popping and the bumps, turbulence, all that. But it was an experience for me, you know. And then when I got out there, the people in Atlanta were so friendly. I was scared first, you know, because they was like, how you doing? You know, don't even know me. Y'all know who I am? Huh? You gonna put your guards down on me? I will steal from you. You know? But all that, being an experience of all that, showed me that there's people out there, man, they didn't even know me, right? Some, I went in the underground to the mall, and a lady pulled me up. She said, is that you? You the one that killed the rapper? Suge Knight? Is that you? And I said,
wait a minute.
That's what I told her. I said, no, but that's my nephew. And I said, he's changed now. That's my sister's son. You know? And I ran with that for the whole weekend I was out there. Because people was pulling me up, asking me where I am. And I already been confronted that before. But when that happened, it made me think about who I am. You know? So I need to stop telling them people that I was Suge Knight uncle, right? And all. So, I had to grow up behind that, because now some people out in Atlanta are going to see me again and might remember, you know. They might come in here and say, man, I thought you was lying to me, you know. One more time. So, we got to be careful what we say to people, right, and the things we do. And that's all in a part of we do recover, you know. I ain't smoking. Man, I'm happy today. I didn't know what I was going to share on or say. I've been wrestling up in this closet for almost a week. Right? There you go. I wrestled for almost a week. And I stood in the mirror. Practicing. I brushed my teeth. Nigga, tell them niggas you ain't brushed your teeth in 3 months. You know, you had hits still stuck in the crack of your teeth and stuff. All that I thought, you know, but now I could brush my teeth, shave, bathe, all that feels good, you know. Just my coming in Narcotics Anonymous has afforded me to live, you know, gain some self-respect for self, you know, and have a self-respect for myself. I don't just shoplift off the thought no more. You know, because I can go in the store and it'll tell me, all right, you know the store, you know all employees, who to look out for, the security, get them. That's addict man, right? But I can't act on that thought. I have to remember this is just a thought. Sometimes it might tell me, wanna be all right, nobody will know. But it was just a thought. So I stand here with 5 years clean. All by not acting out. My network told me, they said, Dirk, if you just give yourself a break, you know, and stop living on the edge, put the image down, you'll be all right. So I took the risk and tried it. So I'm free. The war's over. Ain't nobody after me. I completed a 6-year parole, been on the street 8 years, you know. And through all that, I did go back out once because I thought I could do it one more time. See what I'm saying? I followed the obsession and compulsion. I followed it, and I jackpot. Had a good job. And I knew I could get her out of Section 8. This is what happened. I went to a convention here and chased her. I saw her. I'm going to get her. That's, she fat to death. And I was on a chase. And, man, I met her. We hooked up. And they say, hear this story first. I ain't need all that. I told you I get cocky sometimes. So I chased her and got to know her. She became God. And what I did, I allowed her to dictate my life, you know, and I forgot about me, who I was. So the image that I had as a hustler, that I could get her out of Section 8. So I went and copped. Thought I could flip, you know, a package, a 62. I thought I could do it one more time and jackpot. I smoked the whole 62. And I ain't do it right away. It ain't happen right away. It took some months, you know, but I was coming in here dirty. Living clean, walking dirty. You know, I did that for a long time when I met Narcotics Anonymous. And when that happened to me, it was some changes I had to go about. I had to get real with me. Who am I in here for? I don't go to meetings for you. I don't go to meetings for my girlfriend, for my sponsor, for my children, well, my daughter, you know. I do it for me now. I'm the most important person right now. I cannot smoke crack. Crack stripped me of everything. So I keep all that up front. I go to meetings. I do step work. I'm in service, committed to service, you know, committed to service. I do the next best thing to write. When I learned that slogan, I heard that in here. I said, man, just do the next best thing to write. Bing. A little bell ring. Okay? I'm going to try that. Doing the next thing to write. Now I'm accumulating some things, some dreams. Okay? They call it dreams. We all have dreams. Okay? All my dreams are being accomplished. Some of them scary. You know? I don't really want to be responsible. But that's a part of life. God gave me a free will. He said, Dirk, you can have whatever you want. All you have to do is be obedient. Do the next thing to right, and you can have what you want. I now have a business coming off the ground, okay? I just got sued, and I didn't go kidnap her children. I didn't go burn up nothing, you know? All that's changed, you know? Because resentment and get back is a part of my lifestyle, you know? But I don't act out like that no more. Thanks to my sponsor. The peace I see in him has gravitated to my life. And I have other brothers too, you know, that I watch. They say we learn. I had to be taught this, y'all. I didn't get this just writing either. You know, the writing marinated all this to happen. Huh. And I didn't learn that one either till I got here. So now I rumble every day for my clean date. My clean date is my title. I rumble for that. I wear some 16-ounce gloves and rumble every day to keep that date. I no longer have to change it, only if I want to. No. So mood change and stuff like that has to be identified once it happened in my world. I cannot just go through something and not analyze why I'm like this, why this is happening. You know, look at the part you played, Dirk.
That's right.
You didn't finish the job. She wanted her money back. You know, that's what it boiled down to. I'm not going into details why I didn't finish. My part was I didn't finish. Okay? So I had to be responsible and face my part without acting out, using, assassinating somebody else's character behind all that. That's change. That is change. Woo! He said big boy stuff. I've been going to big boy toys too. Yeah. That's for my cars and trucks. You know. And that's stuff you can get if you just don't use. You know. This program awesome, man. But I want to thank my high power just delivering me. You know. I got 5 minutes. That's a direction. Here you go. 5 minutes. And I'm glad I did okay. I don't usually share real long. I learned that by being in service on H&I. You know, just putting back. Share your experience, strength for hope as an addict, and give it away. And pass the dice. You know, it's a direction in Lowe's and Home Depot to say, shoplifter will be prosecuted. Okay? I got to remember that one. So every time I go in a store and addict man show up, say, get them lawnmowers down off that rack. You know, I got to remember that topic, that direction. So it's all about change. I thank the Nirvana area. That's who poured this. Right? Okay. And I thank them for calling me. They picked me out of all y'all. You know what I'm saying? I was kind of touched. I called them. I was like, call my sponsor. Say, man, you know they asked me to share at Ocean City. Man, I wrote on because I got some clean time, successful clean time, okay, from doing work. And they asked me to share my experience, strength, and hope. So I'm not smoking crack, I'm not robbing and stealing, and I want to remain free. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you for sharing, Derek.
Hey, you can stop sweating.
Now I'd like to introduce our second speaker, and that's Warner G.
I got to read this. Yeah. I'm Ag named Warner G. Speaker's statement, the NA member chosen speaking to me needs to be someone who is working and living in a program of recovery, which is the 12 steps and 12 traditions, in areas where there's not abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions. There is a possibility the group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, remind us that there's NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distance to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose of carrying a message to the recovery to the addict that still suffers. When speaking in NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It's not necessary to dwell excessively on active addiction or war stories because we all know what it's like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using. We are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. Again, I'm addict named Warren G. I really like to take an opportunity to say that I'm real grateful for allowing this area, allowing me to come out to share my experience, strength, and hope. And I want to give a warm welcome to the newcomer, And we ask that you keep coming back because this program truly works. We are your examples of this program works. If you're sitting in the meeting, right, if you got one day, you got two, you're sitting down, you got a week, you got 3 weeks, Narcotics Anonymous is a worldwide fellowship, and no member of Narcotics Anonymous skip over what you got in this right here. Nobody. So I want you to feel welcome. You know, I was real touched when they asked me to come out and share my experience with Jehovah. They asked me last year, and I came. And I'm going to tell y'all the things that we carry on the inside that we try to cover up and we put the mask on. You understand? That's the process of recovery. You know, I thank God for this process, man, because what they did, they gave me an envision. They gave me an insight. No longer as I look at my situations on the outside, I start looking within. And I start asking for help. They told me to get a home group. They told me to get a sponsor, man. I'm going to tell y'all right now, I came in here in 1992 and used for 4 years. Every time there was a meeting, they say, is that adequate 24 hours or less? Everybody would like start scratching their head looking like, did he do it again? I got to the point where I thought that this program would not help me. I'm talking about, man, desperation, man. I'm talking about my story was when I came in here, the only thing that I had to hold on to was the fear. And how distorted it sounded, I wasn't going to let that go. And how distorted it sounded, I was going to sit here with this because I thought that this program worked by osmosis. As long as I was with a whole bunch of people that used to use drugs and were still using drugs, I say that I was all right. Until I went out and I used again, and I had nowhere to go, and I came back in here. Until, like, I was judging people when they was coming through the door and they was looking crusty and they was crawling through the door and I was looking at them, I was sitting up there and say, well, damn. I hope I don't never be like that. And a year later, they was raising their hand, man, and the death rolled off their face and they would seem to be happy, man. I was still sitting there with a couple days and cobwebs was, like, growing in my chair and I had to question myself. Was, like, I really an addict? See, it took me a long time to accept that I was an addict. Some of us still play with that. Because, see, I like to go on a self-will run. You know what I mean? Now, like you know, now that I stopped using drugs, I could do what I want to do. I can go where I want to go. Until the things that I think to fix me bind me up. And I want to escape. So that's why we say social susceptibility don't equal recovery. Because you can obtain all those things, but let's talk about the void. See, I'm talking about the things that I carry around, right? That I never took the opportunity to look at until you people showed me. And I come in here and I continue to still learn about the things that I'm in denial about. You know, denial impact. It wasn't that bad last time. It wasn't that bad. It really, really wasn't. I'm going to do it this way. It really, that's what I suffer from. So they told me to get a sponsor, man. I got my sponsor, man. I'm going to tell you, I ran through a whole bunch of them. I don't know, maybe y'all can ID, you know, because look, addicts, we don't see the light. We feel the heat. And you can't sit up under this literature with your sponsor giving you some suggestions because it's going to get hot. See? So they say get a home group and they get a sponsor, man. I got a home group. It's called Stepping in Serenity. I'm from the greater Camden area with 1 mile east of Philadelphia region. And some of my old-time members in my home group are sitting right there. I love you, Cheryl, because she put me in service. She put me in service. You know, but I like to say, man, you know, I got my sponsor, and he was talking about, like, buy the basic text. So if it's a newcomer in here, buy the basic text. And I wanted to get on the steps because when I was making meetings, everybody was sharing about the steps. You know, he said, what you need to do, he said, in preparation, he said, there's chapters before who's an addict. He said, I want you to read them. And they're all interrogatory because they have question marks. Who's an addict? They want you to ask yourself. My sponsor said it would be a disjustice if I sponsor you, you don't know who you are and what you're dealing with. What makes you an addict, Warner? And I kept saying a whole bunch of stuff, and he kept saying no, and I started getting mad. You know what I mean? Because I would go back and look in the book and say, oh, I got him now. And I would go back, and he said, nah. He said, listen, he said, I want you to look for the sentences in the chapters to answer the question. He said, who's in that? He said, most of us don't have to think twice about this question. We know. It's a man or woman whose life is controlled by. He said, stop right there. He said, I want you to look at the word control. He said, because when you make meetings, he said, it's going to be people in here talking about they duly addicted, cross addicted, poly addicted, BC before crack. See, the disease always wants you to alienate yourself from your health. He said, so it's real important for you to grow up in the literature. He said, if you use that first one 20 years, 15 years, it's going to control you like it always has. He said, then when it get to the point, he said, it don't talk about the drugs. He said, flip the page. He talked about addiction. We react the same way. I started really realizing that, man. You know, I started doing some things like with the chapters, man. I went to the first step, man. He said, what? He said, you're allergic to drugs. He said, but before the drugs, he said, it's the mental reservation in the omission that you cop to saying you could do just one. It's the mental reservation in the omission of just one. I'm clean with almost 10 years clean. I still take myself through that. Just one more. We're talking about addiction and compulsion. A mental reservation, I could do just one more trick. A mental reservation, man, I can do, you know, like the purpose of some things, man. When there's no purpose, then abuse is inevitable. And the addicts, we abuse stuff. You know, like when you get your pay and you know that you're supposed to pay your pay and you go over here and you seen something in the store and they say you can get that just one more. You know when you got the car that can take you back and forth to work and you need another one. Then you get that and you need a truck. Then you get that, then you need a motorcycle. Then you get that, you know, on and on. We're talking about addiction. I'm talking about when is it going to stop? When am I going to feel the freedom? He said, take the steps. The first step. I'm powerless over my addiction and my life is unmanageable. Now, we have a disease that's spiritual in nature, so the solution must be spiritual in nature. And right when I first came around, I was like, well, they saying spiritual in nature. I was shaking my head like I knew what it meant. You know, but I had to get to the point where I had to start realizing, man, as my years went by, I started realizing the nature of addiction. A destructive force. A negative outlook on life rooted in low self-esteem, insecurity, and fear. How I seen this stuff kept coming up in my life, man, dealing with life on life terms, man. They talked about the only way we could do this is we can acknowledge it and then we have to learn how to arrest it. But you can't get your help, man, if you're in denial. You're trying to hide the person that needs the help. So we talk about honesty. Huh? Honesty in nature gets you in touch with reality. Or you could stay in illusions. Dishonesty, the nature of dishonesty is you're in illusion. The nature of honesty, it gets you in touch with reality and you can ask for some help. So it's important for me to practice some honesty. Now, my feelings some days are stronger than the principles that Narcotics Anonymous talks about. When I'm going through my feelings, I can't see nothing. You can't tell me nothing because my disease is real. You don't know what you're talking about. So can we get out the way? Can I get honest that it's me? Because you talked about Narcotics Anonymous. It talks about we can no longer blame people, places, and things. Right. I don't know about y'all, but I get the maximum mileage out of my defects. Everybody else says it's a chicken. I'm saying it's a duck. We talk about the restoration process. Somebody will put, I'm talking about, one of the things in Narcotics Anonymous we talk about surrender is the key. But we also have to keep surrender alive. And how we do that, we make meetings. We call our sponsor. And how we make, because, you know, the first thing we ask person when they use, what happened to them?
Surrender died. We stopped making meetings. Everything is so important. Mourning like surrender to this new way of life, man. That's my responsibility. I'm responsible for my recovery. Faith and willingness. Now, I can come up here and I can explain faith all I want, but there's one part of faith, when I get honest with it, that's the realm that I have to walk in. That's the realm that we all have to walk in. We can ask for help along the way. You know, my thing is, like, when I came to Narcotics Anonymous and I start getting clean, my thing is relationships. Wanting to fix, manage, and control how I feel through other people. Not looking at my feelings. Like, right, and I, you know, it says sometimes we got something that's so deep-rooted, right? I had to go all the way back to my childhood. I remember I was the joker that was consumed with fear because our literature talks about addiction. Some of us admit that our addiction was there long before we used drugs. You know, the mental aspect of what you keep telling yourself, right? So I remember, like, I was the guy who, like, slept in the bed with my sister and my brother, right? And I was real young, and we didn't have no night lights back then. It was real dark. And when it came time for me to go to the bathroom at that early age, I thought the boogeyman was going to cut me off in the dark, so I didn't go. So what I did, right, I would piss the bed. And my mother got tired of it, and my sisters and brothers got tired of being soaking wet when they woke up. And she bought a bed for me. And the night when she told me I couldn't feel the body warmth from my brothers and my sister, that's security, you know, security. Huh? Insecurity, security, body warmth, when you feel like you're secure. I resented her. I laid in the bed soon with fear. Hey, Kenny. Insecurity, resentment, and I never grew out of that. It was real deep-rooted. Real deep-rooted. So it started showing up in relationships that I got with other women. This was something that I grew up with, y'all. We talking about we do recover, man. Sometimes we can't look at the superficial stuff. We got to go deep. And the steps, what helps us do that is the steps. We got to get honest, man. And it's funny how God will work in your life, man, and start pulling some things up. You know, and I remember, like, when I came in Narcotics Anonymous, man, I had a couple years clean, and I met this female, and she kept coming over, and I felt real good about it. You know, this is the first female that I ever dealt with being clean, because all the rest of my relationships was I used. And I wanted it to work so bad that I would do just almost anything. I would just accept almost anything. You know, because I wanted to be like everybody else. You know, we was having conventions and banquets and people were showing up with their partners. And I would stand in the doorway and I would look at them just like, you know, I would look and say, damn, I'm going to be like that one day. I want to have, you know, I want to have that significant other, man. I want to feel like a part of. And I need to tell y'all, man, that every relationship I got in, man, look, I was looking for somebody to storm my psychodrama. Giving out auditions, you can storm my psychodrama. And the thing about it, all I wanted to do, all I wanted to be, man, was to be happy. Like this program talks about, man, to be happy, man. I'm talking about being immature. It talks about in here, we grow up or we die. I'm talking about through the years, man, you get the hair on your face and the muscles and you think you're slinging something, but on the inside, you're still that insecure little punk. And it gets to the point where, man, you start looking in other people's eyes, man, and you start seeing the hurt that you cause, man. And I'm going to tell you something about relationships, man. I would never give 100%. If I gave 50, the other 50, after relationship was over, the other 50 would come by and say, we got to talk. I'm going to tell you about you. I'm talking about like when it's all over with, man, all the feelings, man, and you see the pictures to go, the things that you cause harm, man, will tell you these are the things that you really need to get with. Like the jealousy. Like the envy. Like the control. Like the high expectations. Listen, I'm talking about charging a new person with an old bill. You gonna pay this one. Somebody gonna pay it. Cause I don't wanna look at me. Cause see, I wanna get by. So after relationship was over, man, I'm telling you, like in my apartment, I always used to share living by yourself and living with yourself is two different things. Because I would share all that Gucci stuff, man. I would go home and turn the key, and the disease would say, yeah, come on in here, you good shiny. I'm going to let you know you're not getting no sleep tonight. Matter of fact, I'm going to tell you some things about yourself. Reason why don't nobody want you, because you're ugly. You're an immature little punk. And they know you're crazy. That's why they don't want you. So me sitting up on the couch, either I can have recovery or I can deal with the disease. Because see, the disease got enough sense, man. It ain't going to say nothing to you when you're around a whole bunch of recovering addicts. You know, it'll cross his leg and shut up. Then when you get by yourself, you can't shut him up. You know the pillow talk. And I remember how I would be in the bed, right, and I would hear a car that sound like, now run to the window, now peek out. False alarm. Like I would hear the phone and say, hello, 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 hello. Man, you tripping. I'm talking about the things that my mind play in my feelings, man. I'm talking about trapped, confined in my behavior. I'm talking about confined in my thinking. That's why we so desperately need some freedom in Narcotics Anonymous, man. I thank God for the steps because I no longer stay in situations longer than I used to be as a newcomer. That's the difference. The freedom is in the steps. You got to understand the nature of what the principles do in Narcotics Anonymous. When I surrender, it puts me in position. When I accept it, it keeps me there. See, I have to keep practicing and practicing because my faith wavers a lot. So I need to tell you, man, it took me I was coming in the meeting. I think every time I raised my hand, everybody was like, because they knew what I was going to share. I must have shared about it for 3 years. Everybody would be looking like, oh, damn again. I would raise my hand, people start leading the meeting. Because they knew. My sponsor said, don't talk about her, talk about you. That's why insight is so important. We talk about looking on the inside. Stop blaming other people, places, and things. Two, I read this thing, right, in the steps, and I started talking about healing. The process of healing, it starts when it goes past intellectually accepting something to emotional surrender. You know when you out of a relationship and you accept it because they don't want you no more, you've been calling, you've been doing everything you can, and finally you get some intellectually acceptance. Well, I'm powerless. I guess so, you powerless, they don't want you no more. But every time that person came around, the feelings came up. Boom. 3 years now. I'm still in the bomb, still caught up.
Come on, help somebody.
I'm mad. Oh, B-I-T-C-H. Hope she don't share nothing good into me. Now I hope she share everything bad, because that's good for her, because she should have stayed with me. Immaturity. Carrying my feelings around. Emotionally. I had to surrender emotion, because once I started surrendering emotion, that's when the healing process started to come. I wasn't carrying it around no more.
Yeah.
It didn't so much matter if she felt it. Whoever you judging in your home group, you need to love them like God loved you. We talk about unconditional love here. You don't know their story. Whatever, how are they acting out? You know, when we start judging people, we got a guy in that area, man. I work right, and 2 months I'm off, right? That's 8 weeks. And out of them 8 weeks, 7 weeks he shared in his home group. Every time I went up in the meeting, he was sharing. And I was saying, well, damn. But this guy has been in prison almost all his life. When we get a taste of recovery, man, we be so happy we don't know what to do with it. Instead of looking at his defects, why don't you look at the fruit of his labor? Huh? We talking about stop looking at people how we used to look at them. By the same measure, if I judge him, I wouldn't like it if you judge me like that. Because I'm good for talking about people, but when you talk about me, it's a problem. And I'm really powerless over that, but you know, the thing about it, where it hurts the most is when I try to control what you say about me. I spend a whole lot of time there. Well, who do you think he's talking to? So my thing is, right, check this out. If you do something wrong to me, I got to do something wrong to you to make it right. So you talk about me, so I'm going to pull some skeletons out your closet. And let me get some cosigners here. Guess what happened, man? But I'm talking about hugging him when he around. Hey, man, what's going on? How you doing? I'm the one going home feeling fake. I'm the one going home feeling like a phony. Check this out. The disease will get you to hate one person at a time. It'll get you to hate one meeting at a time. You just be stepping off like, I don't like. And it's doing its job. They ain't sharing like they need to share. I need to go over here. They got some recovery. We talk about a foundation in Narcotics Anonymous, man. We talk about the steps, man. We talk about the spiritual principles, man, is only implemented when we practice them, no matter what. We are going to get the opportunity to practice what we're taught in Narcotics Anonymous. And it ain't on your terms. We say we got problems, man. Problems, the word problem has a connotation like negative. So I say it's just an opportunity for me to get better. Because I don't want to deal with life on life terms. So when it's a problem, you know I'm trying to find an easy way out. I was like my man right here. I didn't know what I was going to share. But I didn't want to stay up in my head. Because one thing about that we suffer from, right? Fear, we're talking about false evidence appearing real. And we're talking about anxiety. It's two different things. Fear is something when you see somebody coming with a shovel, get ready to knock you in your damn head. That's fear. You can see it. It's real. But anxiety is when you conjure something up in your mind that hasn't happened yet for your bad well-being. You know, something like 2 weeks ago, you know, they say you want to come out and share for the convention. And you say, yeah, then you go up in your head. Here it is. You got 2 months to come. So now you got all these feelings and these emotions just riding around. Right? And I'm going to tell you, if you focus on them a lot, right, you know how we do when we ask to share, and you fuck with, you know, it's just like I figured, you know, it's going to be about 100, 200 people in here, right, you know, and one of the things I suffer from is like a people phobia, you know what I mean? I really don't want people to really know me, but I understand I'm a people too. And y'all got the same damn problem I got. So why would I be scared of my experience? Because everybody in here got one. Yeah. I need to say that I'm happy today. I'm happy because of the fact that, man, the joy is in the journey. It's a whole lot of people laying in the bed today that wish that they can be in our company. No matter what y'all going through, I'm not trying to trade this in for nothing in the world. Now, who would have thought that the God of my understanding, man, ordained my steps to be here speaking in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting in Maryland. When I first came through the doors, I would never expect that. Here's a joker that couldn't stay clean. Today I keep my surrender alive. I make meetings. I call people. I do my step work. I'm honest, man, with that mental reservation and admission that I can't do just one. That's before the drug. I'm honest with that one. That's going to help me 15, 20 years down the road to stay honest that I cannot do just one. I hear people in the meeting talking about, yeah, 7, 8, 10, 12. Yeah, I know what I'm going to do if I get high. I'm going to come in the meeting and I'm going to borrow money from everybody. I built my trust. I say, man, it talks about we don't think past the first one. You want to reason with it? Go ahead. I'm not reasoning with it. I'm getting honest. I can't do one. No, I cannot do just one. I remember, man, when I was in McGuire Projects, leaning on the fence with my pants sagging. And the pain was so excruciating on the inside, man, when I knew that I didn't have nowhere to go, man. And I'm talking about God sent the angel. It was the girl I was dealing with. She said, you need to get your little bit of stuff and go because I can't, you know, my kid's father took me through that and I ain't going to let you take me through it. And I sat on the fence. I leaned on the fence because I ain't had nowhere to go. Now, they know what McGuire Projects look like. It don't look like that now, but they know what it looked like. I didn't have nowhere to go, man. It was May 23rd, Memorial Day, 1996. And I haven't used since. But I need to tell y'all, right? The same person went on the inside. She came back out and she says, going upstairs and take a bath and I'm going to feed you something to eat and go to sleep. And I remember going in the room and sitting down on the bed and she started crying and said, you're bigger than that. You're bigger than that. I started crying with her. And I haven't used since.
That's right.
I need to tell you that I'm still with her.
That's right.
And I need to tell you, man, I'm starting to understand what unconditional love is.
Yeah, that's right.
When I look at her, I marvel at how beauty she is, like on the inside as well as on the outside, man. I'm talking about like her values. She withholds her values. We addicts, man, we waver on ours. A lot of giving days. I want to love her in the same measure that she loves me. I need to say, man, early in my relationship, man, when I wanted, she wouldn't give it to me, man, I would turn over in the bed. I would be in the reality of no, and I would turn over into the illusion. Well, if you don't do it, I know where I can go get it at. I used to have a little cliche, a man is only as faithful as his options. You give me some options, and I ain't going to turn them down. Because they validate me, man. I think I'm a player, and that my fourth step, I realized I was a whore. I was a hoe. When you say yeah, it's like the Russian roulette. I'm going to take a chance. Zzz. I'm going to worry about that later on. I'm getting up in age. I can't do what I used to can do. I have to settle down. I need to stop. My mind tell me you can do it. My body say no, you can't. One day she said to me, I was saying something. She said, yeah, but I don't play with nobody's heart. You got to be playing, man. You can't feel playing with other people's hearts. We can feel today. It's a great joy that we can feel today. No matter what you're going through today. Remember when we used? I used to the point that oblivion was preferable. Totally, utterly forgotten. No emotions or nothing. Just let me be. I created my own little world. and I don't want you in it. Today we learn how to live. We do recover. We live around other people. And we're mindful of the way that we act. And that's only through the step process. The second step helped me with my grandiosity, man. There is a power greater than me. Faith has a motivating factor, and so do pain. I made a whole lot of decisions, man, that I always lived in the consequences of my decisions. And it was painful, and I really didn't care because I was stuck there. Today I want to have some faith, man, that I can get better. And the only way that I have that, man, if I get honest, man, I call some people up, man, and they let me know, I'm not staying in the weed, that if it's real crazy, or give me some suggestions what I really need to do. Everything that I have in Narcotics Anonymous, man, you people gave it to me. Because when I came in, I didn't have nothing. I didn't even have a thought concept. My own thought concept was like one more. Today, man, I'm not trapped up in impulsive thinking. I'm looking where I'm going. I'm not going where I'm looking today. I'm looking where I'm going. I want to say this and shut up, man. I have a son that I brought in Narcotics Anonymous, man. I used to carry him on my shoulders, and he's incarcerated now. He's locked up. He's 16 years old. He just turned 17 about three days ago. And it hurted me, man, because the disease was telling me, see, you weren't a good father. You should have been able to take him places and play ball, man. But I started going for the material things. I started working two jobs. I was working 16 hours a day for 4 years. Because I want, like my man said, I want to be on the get back. And I acquired some material things. But I'm going to tell y'all, a lot of times, man, freedom don't mean going to self-will run. Because the very stuff you think that'll fix you, that's the stuff that'll bind you up. You don't have to work for that. And everything that come along with it, man, you can't miss a beat. My employer didn't care about that. I need to say, man, he just told me 5 minutes. You know, it's a great privilege and honor for me to come here and to share my spirit, strength, and hope. You know, to the newcomers, give yourself a break. This is a marvelous program, man. I never would have thought in my wildest dreams that somebody would have enough faith in me to ask me to come out, to share what I have, or to give it away. I'm really grateful. Thanks for letting me share.